Hello. At the very start of the 20th century, there was pretty much a single view in European musical circles that there was no great English symphonist. How quickly things changed. Less than a decade later, one of the great German conductors of his day, Hans Richter, found himself in Manchester conducting the premiere of the first symphony by Edward Elgar, telling the orchestra at the first rehearsal that they were about to work on the greatest symphony of modern times by the greatest modern composer, and not only in this country. Well, tonight we end the cycle of Elgar's symphonies at this year's Proms with a performance of his third symphony, left very much incomplete at his death in 1934, completed 50 years later by the English composer Anthony Payne. We'll meet him later in tonight's programme. The premiere of Anthony Payne's completion of Elgar's third was given by the orchestra on stage tonight here at the Royal Albert Hall, the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Their chief conductor, Zachary Oramo, has paired it with a dazzling piano concerto by Saint-Saëns and with music to begin that marks the centenary of his homeland's independence. It's a suite of historical scenes by Sibelius, written for a large pageant held to promote Finnish nationalism some 18 years before the country finally achieved independence from Russia. For Zachary Oramo, it's a great study of what was yet to come.
This is clearly music of young Sibelius at his most colourful and shows his mastery of pastiche as well, because there is a sort of menuet passage in the second scene and there is a bolero in the third scene, which is quite amazing considering, indeed, for a composer from Finland. For me in this piece, a very special moment is when the gentle, almost wistful menuet played by the bassoons, just the bassoon duo with the strings background, gets suddenly interrupted by this festive, really strong brass fanfare. I think Sibelius is at his most radical and even anarchistic at that point.
Tonight's conductor, Zachary Oramo. The first movement depicts the great hero from the Kalevala, Väinämöinen. The second depicts Finland during the 30 Years' War in the 17th century. And finally a scene depicting the vibrant life at court at Turku Castle in the southwest of Finland, where in the first half of the 17th century it was clearly a very cosmopolitan place, as you'll hear, with a bolero complete with castanets. That applause for tonight's guest leader of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Just joining the orchestra now, he's André Power. And I can tell you it's a full house here at the Royal Albert Hall. Greeting now tonight's conductor, chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, Zachary Oramo, here to conduct the first of the suites depicting historic Finnish themes by Sibelius.
Thank you.
Well, it was all there, wasn't it? Music by a young-ish Jean Sibelius, composed to encourage a sense of Finnish patriotism in the face of the conservative effort by Russia to suppress Finnish culture. A performance of the heroic scenes by Sibelius, a suite of them, produced in Finland in 1899, played by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by their chief conductor, who just happens to be a Finn, Sakari Oramo, chief conductor with the orchestra for the past 4 years. Well, now they turn to the music of one of the great French showmen of the late 19th century, music by Camille Saint-Saëns, his second piano concerto. The Spanish pianist Javier Parianas is about to make his promised debut here tonight, although he joins an orchestra he's worked a great deal with over the years, and clearly has a good relationship with them too. The orchestra certainly enjoys working with him, hard not to like his effervescent personality. Saint-Saëns was a brilliant player himself and a very fast working composer, although he had to be on this occasion. He wrote this concerto in just 2 weeks, all because of a deadline which had suddenly been imposed on him. A concert had been arranged at short notice and he was expected to provide a brand new concerto, so he had 2 weeks to write it, then 1 week to learn it and rehearse it. Well, despite the lack of time, he didn't cut corners. It's a piece that demands dazzling virtuosity from its soloist throughout. I spoke to Javier Parianas earlier and sought his take on a piece that has perhaps unfairly been neglected of late, although, as he told me earlier, everyone seems to be talking about it.
I was discussing this morning with a very nice guy at the breakfast at the hotel about Saint-Saëns number 2, Saint-Saëns number 5, the rest of piano concertos. He was talking to me about how fashionable was this piano concerto in the 60s, in the 70s, maybe in the 80s, because of Arthur Rubinstein. But for any strange reasons, it disappeared from the repertoire. And for another strange reason that I cannot understand why, it's coming back. This one, number 5, that I recently played here in London with the London Philharmonic and Vladimir Jurovsky and everywhere. So I don't understand why suddenly there is a piano concerto that it's coming back from the neglected area of the repertoire and it's disappearing again. This piano concerto is such a beautiful piece, pure joy, and it's a beautiful invitation to the audience to enjoy music, not to think too much, just enjoy about the music.
And it's a dazzling piece of virtuosity. I mean, it says something about Saint-Saëns' player.
He was a great pianist. He's quite demanding, especially the second and third movement, also the very, very beginning, also the first movement. Oh my God, it's very demanding all the time. It's a very original structure because it begins with a very long opening from the piano part with that homage to Johann Sebastian Bach. Then the concerto turns in a different direction, full of colors, full of contrapuntistic ideas. Curiously, the second movement, you're expecting some kind of slow movement, contemplative, but it's not happening. This is the dance, some kind of beautiful homage to the dance. And the reason, because I prefer the second movement a little bit less faster than usual, is because the third movement makes a lot of sense when suddenly you make some kind of attack after the second movement, and it's a piece full of virtuosic style in the third movement, and it ends, like Arthur Rubinstein used to say, with a really furious way to end. It's like inviting to the audience to clap and to enjoy the whole piece. I think it's one of that concertos that people love because it speaks directly to your heart, possibly.
Javier Parianas, the soloist in tonight's Brahms performance of Saint-Saëns' second piano concerto. There's not much let up from the beginning to the end of this piece. The piano absolutely centre stage, beginning alone in commanding fashion, and the pace never eases, really, especially when the pianist has to scale the final virtuosic mountain at the end of the final movement. I suspect the audience here at the Old Albert Hall will roar approval when Javier reaches that summit. Roaring approval now as the leader of the orchestra plays the A for the orchestra to tune. Saint-Saëns had always harboured the ambition of writing a second concerto. There is a 10-year gap between the first one and this one. He was helped in the process by his student at the time, one Gabriel Fauré, who showed him an exercise he'd written. Apparently Saint-Saëns said he rather liked it, took the score, put it in his pocket and told Fauré that he could probably do something with it. And so the story goes, that piece by Fauré provided the theme for the gentle passage in the first movement we're about to hear. Well, the piano is very much centre stage. It is now in position, as you've heard. The orchestra has tuned to it. And so we await the arrival of our soloist this evening and our conductor. So here they come. Onto the stage, Javier Perianis, together with chief conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, Zachary Orono. Javier greeting the leader, saying hello to the audience before taking his seat, ready to play Camille Saint-Saëns' second piano concerto.
Thank you. Thank you.
A thrilling conclusion to a concerto which is pretty much a thrilling ride all the way. The Piano Concerto No. 2 by Camille Saint-Saëns, written in the space of just 17 days during the spring of 1868, and played here tonight at the BBC Proms by the Spanish pianist Javier Perianas, with the BBC Symphony Orchestra conducted by Zachary Oramo. From France to Spain for his encore, perhaps as you might expect, the ritual fire dance by Manuel de Falla, a scene from his one-act ballet El Amor Brujo, The Bewitched Love, played with plenty of fire in that performance by Javier Perianas, giving his Proms debut this evening. The band that eventually became the BBC Symphony Orchestra first went live on the BBC in 1923 and included in that very first broadcast concert the music of Edward Elgar. A decade or so later, it was the BBC that commissioned Elgar to write his Third Symphony. George Bernard Shaw had lobbied the BBC for ages to make it happen. By then, Elgar was living in semi-retirement. He'd become a widower and had stopped writing large-scale works. But he was sufficiently flattered to take up the challenge and perhaps felt obliged because of the efforts George Bernard Shaw had gone to. Sadly, he didn't get very far with it, just 130 pages of sketches mostly, although he did fully orchestrate the opening of the first movement. And when I spoke to Anthony Payne a little earlier today, I wondered how much of a clue those first few orchestrated bars offered him when he embarked on the mammoth task of creating his version of the symphony.
It showed you the size of the orchestra, so it's absolutely vital. But only that. And the whole of the rest of the work, bar, I think it was about six bars, which he also orchestrated, that come in the middle of the first movement at the end of the development section. I just happened to do that bit. That's all there is. I had to orchestrate the whole work virtually, about 98% of it. Everything else was in a series of, well, about 120 pages of sketches, very often not saying where they were meant to be, sometimes saying which movement they were meant to be in, but not where it was to be placed. So you had to work out the structure of the whole thing.
And the mood as well, I imagine, because it was your decision to end quietly.
Oh, yes. And I took, I think, a wise guess. I mean, look at the First Symphony. Begins processionally and quietly, ends gloriously. Second Symphony begins loudly and exuberantly, ends quietly and reflectively. So obviously I thought he ends in the opposite world from the beginning. So that meant it had to end quietly. I thought that was fairly obvious. That taking a broader view, I've been looking desperately at details to get it right from bar to bar. Now I'm stepping back. I thought, what world is it in? Where's it going? Optimistically, pessimistically, ironically, what kind of world was it going to end in? And it's incredibly important in a great big narrative post-romantic symphony that there is an emotional tale to tell. And that was, I think, almost the biggest problem I had, actually, finding where it was going at the end.
And what were your conclusions?
Well, I just had one of these magic moments. I'd gone downstairs to sleep because my neighbour was making a noise on the television. And I suddenly had the idea of the nursery suite as a model for how to end the symphony. The Wagon Passes, which is an amazing little miniature, which is about a carter on a wagon whistling a tune. And you hear it getting louder and louder as it gets nearer and then dying away. It's a simple childlike thing, and yet you suddenly realise that this is life, and it's much more profound than that. And I thought, this deserves to be treated symphonically, and I don't think Elgar would have been displeased with that thought.
Anthony Payne, who is here tonight in the audience to hear this performance by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, the orchestra, as I say, that gave the premiere of the Third Symphony. And here to conduct tonight's performance, live on BBC Radio 3 at the Proms, running off the cycle of his symphonies at the BBC Proms, Zachary Oramo takes the podium for this performance of the Third Symphony by Elgar.
Thank you. Thank you. Anthony Payne's magnificent orchestration of Elgar's Third Symphony, bringing that prom to a close. Zachary Oramo conducted the BBC Symphony Orchestra.